Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013. And on tonight's episode, we are going to be discussing, actually, first off, I'm Johnny Num.
I'm Billy Crash.
Yes, you are.
I couldn't even say it. I'm Billy Crash.
Yeah. It's okay, man. Mm-hmm. But tonight we are going to discuss something that popped into my head recently. And actually, once I thought about it, I happened to watch like a couple consecutive movies that featured this trope. And that is the use of blindness in horror films.
Mm-hmm.
The way I was looking at it was actual characters who are visually impaired.
Right.
Yet often play crucial roles within the narrative or framework of a film. And I know there's like innumerable, or I should say numerous examples of this in action.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was intriguing, and it's something we hadn't talked about before.
No, we haven't.
Yeah, so do you have any general thoughts, Bill, on the use of this in this show? That's good. That's our show, everybody. Yeah. Thank you for listening. Be sure to tip your waitress.
Yes, exactly. No, I actually do, because it's really interesting, because, you know, the biggest blind-based story is Sophocles, Oedipus the king, and the motif of vision or lack of vision and blindness like permeates like every damn line. It's insane, but it's about a character who thinks he could see everything because he solves the riddle of the Sphinx. Yet he goes, he comes across a seer who is blind, but who could see other things outside of that realm. And, and it's interesting because Oedipus learns that, like humanity, we all have to like stumble through the dark and find our way. And a lot of times we don't really know what we think we know, which is the basis of the story. And it's interesting because in horror movies, blindness, like in traditional literature, blindness has always been like, well, somebody needs support, or, right, they have a weakness. The Greeks, Greco-Roman mythology, it was like a curse from the gods. Like, you're being punished, but you might be rewarded in some other way. Mm-hmm. In Christianity, it's like, oh, it's a flaw. And, but don't worry. I mean, maybe God or Jesus will, give you your sight back. And it's interesting in horror, it's not used as a detriment. It might be at one point, but it becomes something other on its own.
Yes.
Yes. Somebody who's blind might have some special other sight or other abilities. Or if they're blind and they have a chance to see, the whole world might be different to them in other ways, which leads to a horror film. So, interesting.
Yeah, and those are kind of the observations I was noticing in a couple of the films that really stood out for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what you said, Bill. And again, sort of just the notion of horror being used to the use of just, using blindness as an example, it's not a disease of the weak type Hallmark thing when you have a character like this in a horror movie, to what you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the character has, we react to the blindness initially is like in that sort of privileged ableist way of saying, oh geez, I feel sorry for them, they can't see. But then it's like, well, they have their talents and their skills often exceed those of the able-bodied people who have all of their faculties, mm-hmm, around them in the movie, which I think is fascinating and kind of an interesting example of how horror can kind of make something that some people would see as an ailment or as a handicap or a weakness, something that's in fact very an indicator of strength, actually.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I love it.
Yeah, and I was finding sort of two subsets. I have like five strong titles that
Damn.
that sort of popped into my head with this. And I'm not gonna, we're gonna have a conversation, of course, but it was more like there were two kind of phenomenon I was noticing in the employment of blind characters in the films. One is that the character is just blind and they don't have any supernatural connection to anything. They don't have any ESP per se, or any psychic capabilities. They're just human beings who happen to not have vision. And then there's the other subset, which you were talking about, which is sort of the seer. You don't have actual literal vision, but you have an inside line into maybe something extrasensory or spiritual, a different realm perhaps of existence that regular human beings are not privy to.
Oh yeah. I like that.
Well, I think it was kind of interesting, just as an aside, the place where I used to live, my neighbor at the end of the hall, she was blind. And I was always kind of I would see her like around the downtown area because I think that's where she works. And it's just there's this very like it's like I would kind of like see her and I would just be like I'm just kind of inspired by this person because it's like they go about their everyday activities and it just kind of it is what it is. Whereas if I were to like unexpectedly lose one of my faculties, like if I lost my hearing or if I lost my sight, I've gotten so used to watching movies and I have a ton of them and I just love the act of watching movies. And I'm just like, geez, how would I be if that if
Gives you.
something happened if something happened to me and I would probably be like a total baby about it, and just kind of curse the world as being unfair. And I'm like, you know what? That's it's just interesting. It kind of puts things into perspective,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was funny. I didn't have a completely blind student, but I had several who were visually impaired in some way, and I had one who was severe. And she was interesting because I knew as soon as she came in the class, it's like, well, I have to adjust. It's like, well, what do I have to do for her needs and everything? Nothing, man. She
Yeah.
never approached me. She never came up to me. She never wanted anything. She was phenomenal, man. She just like crushed the class. She was awesome. And the only thing she would do is she couldn't sign her name. And
Okay.
so every time the attendance sheet went around, she'd ask the student next to her to sign her name. And she never asked for a freaking thing. It was awesome.
Yeah, that is pretty
You know,
cool.
yeah.
Yeah. Well, Bill, do you have any thoughts on like depictions of the blind in popular culture? Do you think it's just in general? Like I was thinking about stuff like Mr. Magoo and I was thinking of like Daredevil.
Oh, I love Daredevil, man. I thought he was such a cool character because he was blind.
Yeah, and I think there have been from what I've heard, there is something to the maybe not to the extent of what is it, Matt Murdock? Is that his name?
Yeah, Murdoch, yep.
But I think there is something to the I guess the additional there's like a sort of compensation for the lack of sight, like your senses become more acute or attuned in other ways.
You know, on the one hand, it's like I don't really know, but on the other hand, it's like, well, they have to. Like, what are you gonna,
Right, right.
you're. I mean, we actually have 30 senses, like an internal gyro compass and all this other shit, but like the five main ones, touch, smell, and taste, and sight, and what was the other one? Hearing? I forgot what I started at. Jesus Christmas. But the interesting thing is like how many blind people actually write literature or movies and have a blind character in there. That's maybe true to form. I mean, if you or I were to I can't speak for you, but I know if I was had a blind character, I'd have to meet with somebody who's blind and like, am I getting this right? You
Oh,
know,
yeah.
what am I missing? What am I doing wrong? You know, I want to make sure it's accurate and not like, oh, that's the Hollywood screen version of a blind person. You know, I wouldn't want to be that guy, you know?
And there are times when I kind of get to, and I mean this might be speaking to my sort of curmudgeonly ways as I get older, but it's like when I see a movie, it doesn't have to be someone who doesn't have their sight. It can be just like any movie that's depicting someone with a disability with a big studio backing behind it. And it's like an obvious push for an Oscar. I get very cynical about
Oh,
that.
yeah,
You know,
automatically.
you know, because usually it is like very sanitized and insincere, and it's stuff that glosses over kind of like the actual struggle is a montage scored to some crappy pop song or something like that. You know, it's not real. You know, I would rather watch a documentary than watch some dramatization of someone and their struggle, you know, against, you know, kind of not a disability, just a, you know, a challenge that they're facing, you know, a physiological challenge.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's not a perfect film to me. I know Bleeding Critic really really loves this one. I gave it 3.5 stars, but I always think of automatically right from the beginning. I think of Eric Stoltz's film Late Phases from 2014, starring Nick DiMicci.
Oh yeah, good call.
You know, he's that veteran. He's alone. He has his dog, and he's got to live in this. You know, he's
Retirement
moving.
community, yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, and it's like, Tina Louise from friggin' Gilligan's Island's in it and all. And suddenly, shit starts going wrong, and there's freaking werewolves in his neighborhood. It's like, well. Dude, I'm a vet, and I gotta fight again, man. And he's blind, and it's like, and it's interesting because, it's like, oh man, if he had sight, he'd be able to like see what's coming and shit. But it was great because you're not like feeling sorry for him, but you're like, oh, I wish he had another tool, you know? And meanwhile, he has a shovel and he's going to town, and I thought that was really cool. I thought it was a really good movie. I liked what they did with that. I thought it was a pretty cool story.
And I think that's another thing, Bill, is that even if he weren't blind, it's like as you age, your senses start to deteriorate, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they just do. I mean, we all go through a cellular breakdown, and it's something you can't fight. Some people might have better genetics than others, but like, in the end, you know, it's still like, you know, it's gonna happen. But and that was the good thing too about his character. It wasn't like, oh crap, I'm blind, I'm screwed. It's like, oh crap, I'm blind, so what? Give me, you know, like, you know, I gotta do something, you know. And the cool thing is too, in the movie, he's not just like, what's going on? He's gotta get acclimated to a whole new environment as a blind person. And it's like, oh my gosh, and he's got this shit on top of it. It only added to the suspense element, to the oh my gosh moments. And like, I thought it was so done. Yeah, I mean, Eric Stoltz wrote it, and Adrian Garcia Bogliano directed, and Nick D'Amici killed it, man. He just like owned that. He was just flawless.
Yeah, Nick DiMicci is a good he's a good go-to guy for like tough guy roles. And that was kind of because he was in Stakeland and
Oh,
Cold in July,
yeah.
those Jim Mickle films.
Yep.
And he was great in Late Phases. I mean, it was just like a really, like you said, it was a really fresh take on like, well, you get what can you do with werewolves? And it's a demographic that's often, you know, older people are often ill-served in horror films. You often don't get
Exactly.
you don't get a horror film that's based around like a guy who's a retiree or whatever.
Yeah, retired, vet, blind, old. It's like, damn. You know, it's like, this is, you know, I was like, Eric Stoltz, that's awesome, man. That was great.
Yeah, it's kind of like they reconfigured the kind of the veteran seeking revenge kind of genre
Exactly.
and turned it into a werewolf movie instead, which is pretty cool.
It
And
was refreshing in so many ways, but it was really cool how, it's like, I'm blind, so what? Let's go. And I thought that was really, really cool.
I think to that end, Bill, there's that element of it's inspiring to watch that, because it's like, instead of like, oh God, people are getting killed around me, I'm just gonna curl up in a ball and cry. I'm like, no, fuck that. I'm gonna use what I know and fight back, you know?
Oh yeah, and if I'm going down, I'm taking a werewolf with me, kind of thing. You know, it was awesome.
Exactly. Get that fucking werewolf.
Sons of bitches.
You know, Bill, to a sort of similar survival themed end. The movie, and this is strange, this one jumped out at me. I rewatched it recently for the first time in many years. It is not a good movie, but I think its depiction of a blind character is, like you were saying about late phases, it's a refreshing depiction of a character like that. And that is Wes Craven's The Hills Have Eyes Part 2.
Wow.
Have you
Part
seen
two.
have you seen it, Bill?
Oh yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's not a well written or thought out or executed movie, really. I'm a sucker because I've bought Arrow's limited edition box set because it had nice cover art.
Shiny.
And it's funny, as a sidebar, there's like a half hour featurette on there with a couple of key people from the film, like behind the scenes people, and everyone is basically lamenting how the film didn't turn out how they wanted it to, and how everybody was disappointed. It's like a half hour of regrets about the movie.
Oh man.
So it's kind of a down supplements package. But my point is, there's a character named Cass, played by Tamara Stafford in the film, and apparently she only has four acting credits on the IMDb, and this is the last of them. She depicts a blind person. And what I think is refreshing, and where Craven kind of gets his sort of a glimmer of innovation in this sequel, which is otherwise kind of by the numbers, is the fact that this character is not treated as the other at any point in the movie. You know, we quickly ascertain that she doesn't have her sight. But it's also just as quickly established that, hey, she has a boyfriend, and her boyfriend's in the motocross, and oh, they're going to a tournament, so they're loading up on this bus to go to this motocross tournament. The interesting thing is, the character interactions are such that it's never, there's no like obligatory dialogue like, oh, it's too bad Cass can't see or whatever,
Yeah, I hate that shit.
or can't, really, connect with the group. There's none of that. She is treated like a total equal among her peers. And as it turns out, like we were discussing earlier, she turns out to be a lot smarter and resourceful. And spoiler alert, she's the final girl in the movie. So that kind of tells you something there, that for all the things that are kind of like juvenile and just seem kind of like Craven was kind of on autopilot for this film, that aspect of it is actually really strong. And I was kind of bummed when I saw that Miss Stafford only had those four credits, because I think with Hills Have Eyes 2, granted, I don't think it lifted anybody's profile, but I was like, someone could have seen her and said, hey, I want you in this movie because I saw what you did there, and it was like really unique and innovative. And so her character really holds her own, and it's sort of like you said, Bill, like Nick DiMicci in late phases, he has to acclimate to an unfamiliar place, and then from there he has to, figure out how he's going to engage the other. And that's the same thing that happens here. So
That's really cool, man. Because you automatically reminded me of something And I know it's I know it's fictional, and I'm trying to I've been trying to find the truth behind it. But the blind swordsman,
Okay.
Zatoichi,
Yeah.
I remember my father tell I can't find historical proof, but my father, I remember him telling me as a kid, he said the best samurai were blind because they would never be distracted by anything visual. And I was like, I'm like, that makes so much freaking sense. And on the other hand, I'm like, I can't find, what the hell is that? Holy crap. I have my phone off and everything, and well, whatever.
Alien transmission, Bill.
Alien transmission. But I was like, that really mesmerized me. I was like, wow, not to not be distracted, to close your eyes and like feel the force, Luke, and like,
Yeah, it's almost like a leap of faith kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like I could see that. Like, I remember when I was doing self-defense training, the first thing they said was like, don't look at your opponent's face. And I was like, what? They're like, don't look at their eyes. Their eyes isn't, I remember the guy saying, the eyes may be the window to the soul, but it's going to get you killed. He said, don't look at the eyes, look at their hands, look at their shoulders. Do you see him moved? If that guy's moving his left shoulder, then a left punch is coming at your face. Like shit, like logical stuff like that that we don't really take into account, And it's like, can you hear, can you hear your opponent coming? Can you hear what they're going to do? Can you hear where they're at? And I thought that was really interesting. But yeah, if anybody knows out there, let me know if there's proof of a historical samurai fighter that would who was blind. That'd be awesome.
Because they made a movie about him, right?
Oh,
Or
a
they
movie, and
made
it was a Japanese television series as well.
right.
Yeah,
Okay.
back in the 60s, early 60s, actually.
Yeah, because I thought Zatoichi was like part of the Criterion Collection or something
Yeah,
like that.
it's got to be at some point there.
Okay. All
I think
right.
Rucker Howard, didn't he play a blind swordsman of sorts at one point? But anyway.
That's beyond
Yeah.
my realm, Bill. Yeah.
Well, I know the great Japanese actor Takeshi Kitano did, that's for sure.
Oh yeah,
That
he's
dude,
awesome.
he's friggin' amazing.
Oh yeah.
Man, but as for horror, sometimes I get like I was looking up like what horror movies do I like that have and it has nothing to do with a person being blind. It has to do with like, is this well written or is this a piece of crap?
Yeah.
And like I know Palco, this is for Greg Palco, Palco Designs. I know he loves Tombs of the Blind Dead and
Oh gosh, I forgot about
Return
those.
of the Blind Dead, which is like and it's great, they're dead, they're coming back, and it like it doesn't matter if they're blind or not, man. If they're dead and reanimated, you're screwed,
And he's got the full size one in his apartment
Yeah,
somewhere.
he do. Oh man, can't wait for you to see that. I haven't seen that one yet either. I can't wait. But like the one movie that really bothered one of the movies that really bugged me was Don't Breathe from 2016, which I know a lot of people really love and all of that bullshit.
I liked it too, yeah.
The whole thing is you have this, these scumbags are breaking into this guy's house. He's blind or think they're going to take advantage of him. And they go in his house and who knows, I don't know, somebody made a noise or whatever. The guy wakes up to check it out. So he's walking by all of them and they're like stiff as a board and they're not breathing. Don't breathe, And he's walking right through them. But before anything started, before they went in there, the one girl's outside smoking. The guy walks by, he couldn't smell the tobacco on his per like bullshit. It's like I'm like the whole fucking movie's a piece of shit now. It's like absolutely stupid and it pissed me off and that was it.
I need to go back and revisit that, Bill, because I feel like that's not how it went down, but
Oh, it's exactly how it went down.
you know, because every time you bring that up, I'm like I find myself second guessing myself. I'm like, I gotta watch it again.
And it did have moments in it that I liked. The third act was trash, but the whole thing was, the cool thing was that they're in this guy's house. He's blind, but it doesn't matter because it's his house. He knows it. And that's what I thought was, that's what I really liked, you know? But it was just really, I just thought it was friggin' ridiculous, man.
So conceptually, it failed before it really got started for you.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. But yeah, I'm like, come on, the whole, it's like, that's like a plot hole, you know? Like, fuck, oh.
Well, and I also think some it's sort of like the inverse of late phases, where it's an older individual getting used to new surroundings. This is an older individual who knows his
Yep,
surroundings,
knows his world, yeah.
but there's kind of the thing of that film is Don't Breathe, that is that, the way the trailer is the way the trailer is set up, it's like, and the film is set up, it's like establishing that from the get-go, the blind man has some sort of issue, because they just go right into the home invasion aspect of it.
I know, I
So
know.
there's got to be something going on there to make this a horror film, and there is. But it's kind of silly to, I don't know if it was really marketed this way, but just the fact that, well, there's two sides to the story.
Yeah, Stephen Lang was great.
Yeah, he was.
He's always solid.
Yeah, Bill,
I don't know, Johnny, tell me.
this is a film that I think is okay. It's kind of a bizarre thing in the annals of Hollywood because of its cast. It's got this seriously overqualified cast in it, from back in the 70s, and it's this the Sentinel, Bill.
Oh my God. Oh
And
my
I know
God.
you've seen it. I know you've seen it.
Seen it a ton of times, man. It's awesome. And we're talking the original.
Yes, yeah. I mean, there's also a movie called The Sentinel with Michael Douglas from the early 2000s, I think, which is like an action film, but
Yeah, whatever.
yeah, but it's, I immediately thought of the John Carradine character who plays the
Oh yeah.
priest who's like the lone occupant of this
Oh yeah.
top floor apartment in this old New York City brownstone. He never leaves. Well, what's he doing up there? Why is he up? Why has he been up there for so long? And I think this is an interesting movie. I don't think it's a perfect film,
No,
and
it's not, but it's a joy.
yeah, and I read the novel that it's based on, and the novel's really a piece of shit. So I'm actually kind of surprised that they were able to get a decent, an entertaining movie out of it. But this is a case where the blind individual is, per the title, he is guarding something in that apartment. We don't really know what it is until, until the third act, though. There are plenty of ominous hints dropped by all the weirdos who are living in the building, including Burgess Meredith and Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh yeah. Oh, Beverly D'Angelo.
Over the stretch pants, Bill. Over the stretch
Oh my
pants.
God, man. I mean that cast is loaded. Jerry Orbach, Eli Wallach, Martin Balsam,
Christopher Walken, Chris
yep.
Sarandon, yeah.
Jeff Goldblum in one of his early roles.
For like 2 seconds, yeah.
Yeah, the photographer and Christina Rains and no, but it's, oh yeah, they got a lot of flack for that movie.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the other thing about it, is that in the last act of the film, it employs actual circus performers, like the quote unquote freaks that you saw in Todd Browning's Freaks.
Oh yeah.
And they're employed in sort of a dubious capacity, let's put it that way, in terms of what they're representing in the film. So I think the Sentinel is pretty the favored word of today's culture, problematic by today's standards. But I still think there's some validity to it as kind of an escapist horror film, and I really love how they depict the priest played by John Carradine. He has these
Oh yeah.
probably extremely painful contacts in his eyes to distinguish the lack of sight. I think they're sort of like these featureless kind of contacts that makes it look like he has no color, or
Oh yeah.
no pupils or anything like that.
Yeah, he's
And again,
pale, his hair is white. I mean, he's just like, he is white. I mean, that's symbolic on its own in this case.
yeah, it's just this depiction of very much a character who's, he's been through hell. He's seen things.
You people
It's
wouldn't believe.
exactly.
And that's the beauty of it. I mean, the whole symbolic element, it's like he's blind, but that's okay because he has a whole other purpose that's really, really awesome.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying, Bill, about the blind samurai,
In a way.
the fact that he's the sole inhabitant of this of that top floor. Well, okay, he's just sits in front of that window with his Bible and his crucifix, and that can't get less distracted than that, basically. So, and I mean, that does play into the machinations of the story.
Oh
So
yeah.
it is really kind of interesting, in that manner.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. I mean, that was a fun movie. That's one of my it's not perfect, but whenever it's on, I can't take my eyes off of it, and I'm not trying to be punny. I mean, that's just the way it is. That's
It's definitely kind of a fun occult film from the 70s.
Yeah, and then you have and they're both out of Hong Kong, and they were it was remade in the United States. We'll talk about that in a moment. But the original from Hong Kong, and the Eye 2, which are both good. They both have their creep issues, and it's a woman who is blind who's given the opportunity to see, but something else happens, along the way. She could see spirits as well, and it's like, oh shit, and things get very ugly and dark and horror laden in the Hong Kong versions, and of course the Americanized crap watered down commercial version. You have a freaking happy ending, which I despise, and that stars Jessica Alba. She had nothing to do with the writing on that crap, but it was great. It's like, this person like can't wait to finally see, and they get the chance, and it's like, again, in this case, be careful what you wish for. I want sight. Great, you have it, and now you can see things that you shouldn't see, you shouldn't want to see, and it's suddenly you have a whole new burden upon you, which I thought was intriguing. It's like she sacrificed one burden for something else, and the something else is actually worse in her case than being blind.
Well, it's kind of interesting, Bill. I actually haven't seen any of those movies.
Jeez, Christmas, what the fuck's wrong with you?
I know, and I read your Hong Kong horror list. I felt really inadequate after reading it. So, but I think to myself, the thing with surgery or going on medication for something, there's always this. It kind of plays into that notion of there always being, oh, well, this is going to make you feel better, but it could all. But it could also make you feel worse. And, if your erection lasts for more than 5 hours, Jesus Christ,
Yeah, like,
while the happy
congratulations.
music plays. But so I
Side
think that,
effects, baby.
yeah, and I think that's, I just think that's kind of an interesting concept. And the fact that it seems so simple, it's like, I'm surprised that, why wasn't that thought of sooner, because it just
Yeah.
seems like the stuff of Poe or whatever. It's like,
Exactly.
There's this simple concept, but there's a catch and there's a twist to it, or a Twilight Zone episode, kind of. So,
Yeah, and it was so cruel too. It's like, oh, finally she could see. Oh, wait. It's like, that's just wrong. Just like,
Oh, yeah, it's cruel.
yeah, totally. Yeah, but it's a horror movie, so that's what you fucking get. It's like,
And how do you get out of it?
how do you? Yeah, what do you do? Do you pull an Oedipus and gouge out your eyes? I mean, like, what do you do? Oof.
Good question. Well, Bill, a movie that I would be remiss if I didn't include is
Uh-oh.
Lucio Fulci's The
Here
Beyond.
we go.
And it's the character of Emily, played by Cinzia Monreale. And she has a seeing eye dog, and she is one of the seer characters. She has information that the other characters aren't or would have no real way of being aware of.
Right.
And she does have a connection to the spirit world, or sort of another, a spiritual realm, let's say. She can commune with ghosts. I mean, there's the possibility that she herself is a ghost that only the main character can see, but that's kind of left very ambiguous.
It almost has a Sentinel ripoff element to it.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, considering where the building that she inherits is located and stuff like that. But this is, well, you gotta think about what lies beneath. But this is probably my favorite Fulci film, actually.
Yeah, I remember you talking about it in the positive at some point. So I was like, I'll take this will be the safe bet. I won't talk about Manhattan Baby, which also has a sight deprived person in a minor capacity. So, but something I really liked about this, and it ties into Fulci's kind of really choppy. Some of his films from this era did not really make a whole lick of sense. They were to say the least. Like, and The Beyond is one of them. The Beyond is a film where characters pop up and disappear, or they get
Right.
killed, and you never see. There's no follow-up, and no one seems to care.
That's Italian cinema, though, and that's one of the issues with Italian cinema. It's like, hey, we're drinking wine, we're not telling stories, whatever, you know?
Well, and something I like that I've grown to like about his stuff in particular is how they kind of flow with a nightmare logic, I would say. So it kind of is okay. I've come to accept the fact that, yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I'm not really too interested in making it make a lot of sense. So I'm just gonna let it kind of wash over me as an experience.
Right.
And what I like about the Emily character in this film, for as benign as she is to Catriona McCall's character, there's this element of danger, because she may be able to commiserate with the spiritual realm, but
Right.
that doesn't make her immune to repercussion or lashing out from that plane. So I feel like she's got threat from that plane and potential threat from the regular human plane as well. I mean, again, it's a very ambiguously executed film, but I just found that kind of an interesting twist in the fabric, so to speak. So.
Yeah, and no, that's good. That's a good one. And I forgive me, I can never pronounce this woman's name correctly. I love her. She's a wonderful actress.
What is it?
Spanish, Bellen, Bellen, Ruida, the Spanish actress. She starred in the movie Julia's Eyes from 2010. It's a horror mystery. It's good. You know, I gave it the same amount of stars as I did for Fulci's The Beyond. It didn't hit me as hard as other movies that she's been in. But in this case, it's interesting because she's slowly losing her sight while she's trying to investigate the mysterious death of her twin sister. So you have the whole race against time element. It's like, can I figure this out before I go completely blind? And so that was the one cool strong element, because it just added a whole nother layer of suspense and fear to the story, which is really wonderful. But yeah, this one fell a little short for me, in re other than because I know I don't know if you like it. She was in The Uninvited Guest, which I think is phenomenal, and
Was she in The Orphanage as well, Bill?
yes, which is one of my favorite horror films of all time. So is The Uninvited.
Okay.
So I love her very much. She is delicious.
So do you feel that they didn't necessarily do what they, going back to the use of blindness, do you feel like they didn't use that as ideally, or is it more just the story didn't really back up what they were trying
Yeah,
to
it was the
do.
story that fell short. It had nothing to do with any other element but story. And it was like, you had a good idea here, but you didn't flesh it out well enough. And it wasn't, just wasn't strong enough. It wasn't as strong as those other films, which
Yeah,
was
that's
sad.
yeah, and that's disappointing.
Yeah, because you don't want someone to use like, she's going to be going blind. Yeah, that's awesome. No, it's like you have to really attach this to the character. You have to make it something that isn't just like a trick, isn't
Or
some
a
contrived
gimmick.
gimmick. Yeah, you know, it's like, and I think that's when any film works that has, any character in it, like whatever the character, whatever, you know, the characters inhabiting the story, if they have certain elements to them that are unique and profound, strengths and weaknesses, that's fantastic. But as long as they're not contrived, then they have merit. But if it's like, oh, that person's just going blind and you're just using it as a trick, then you're like, well, screw it, you know?
Just as like a gotcha kind of thing or something. Well, Bill, I know you don't like this movie, so
Here we go.
I won't say too much about it. But again, this is another character who is firmly earthbound in terms of their not having sight. And that is Daniel, played by Flavio Bucci in Suspiria. Not the Tilda Swinton Suspiria,
I
though.
know the one that's good. I know. I hope I catch flack for that, you ninnies.
But in any case, what's interesting about him is that he's basically playing piano at a ballet academy and it's inhabited by witches. But he doesn't show any real outward signs that he's aware of any sort
Right.
of malfeasance. He has an outburst when his seeing eye dog bites a child and he's fired and he's kind of unceremoniously thrown out. And I want to concentrate on the scene where he's in a town square at night and it's dark. I think it's kind of brilliant. Because, it does, for as much as people say, and I don't disagree with this necessarily, that Argento just does a lot of stylistic stuff and he does it not really in service to anything. I don't disagree with that all completely. But I love that sequence in the town square because it kind of depicts things from he's not seeing what we're seeing, but we're seeing very little because it's so dark. The only thing we see are some silhouettes against a building. So what Argento does, I think, which is interesting, is he kind of does put us in Daniel's shoes. Like that weird sort of like shouting panic, like, what's happening? I don't know what's happening. And it's like this paralysis of fear that he's going through, but his dog is like staying calm at his side, so he's kind of like maintaining this, stance, but he can pick up that something is not right around him. And I think that kind of adds to that the build up and the suspense of that sequence, actually.
No, I can't argue that. Yeah, I don't care for the movie, but that scene, I get, yeah.
I just thought that was like a good example of using technique to kind of replicate, the experience of kind of not being able to see or not being able to see clearly.
Now that the rain is gone.
Oh, it's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day, Bill, I promise. And the sun will come out tomorrow. Bet your bottom
Oh
dollar there
my
will be sun, Bill.
Jesus Christmas. Forget I said anything. Oh man.
Sunny days sweeping the clouds away. Come on, Bill, let's get on to Horror Street before I start finding more songs with sunshine in them.
Jeez, well, I don't even know what to say next, man, about I just want, oh God, we could go what back to scene. Go ahead, you go, man.
Well, I have a big one, and that's the last one I have.
All right, let's
So,
do that.
well, I think this film is a piece of genius.
Oh, great.
I love it. It's in the Criterion Collection. Oh, It doesn't mean anything. Criterion doesn't have any taste. You suck, Criterion. Boom.
Damn, I wasn't gonna say that, but go ahead. They have a whole Godzilla collection, man. Like freaking A. They love Godzilla. It's like, who doesn't?
I thought it was kind of quirky that they said, oh, spine number 1,000, and you know Godzilla's got those spiny things.
Yeah,
like
I know.
Anyway. Yeah. It's funny. It's a pun.
Yes, it is, Johnny.
Anyway, the movie is Michael Powell's Peeping Tom from 1960.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, man.
Why don't you? What do you think of Peeping Tom, Bill? Just as a movie or as a depiction of a blind character?
Peeping Tom is on my all-time greatest horror movie list.
Deservedly so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's far. I think it's definitely far superior to Psycho. That came out the same year in 1960. This movie is so unsettling. It's like in so many ways.
It's more disturbing than Psycho.
Far more, far more. Yeah. It's just nuts, man. It's just it has so much impact, and the cinematography and the camera use and the acting is something else, man. So
yeah.
Oh, great, excellent film, excellent film.
Yeah, and I haven't watched it. I have it, but I haven't watched it in many years, and I'd like to remedy that because I've kind of had an itch to revisit it. But something I like about the film, Bill, is that it's so clever in so many
yes.
ways, because it's the title is about is itself an act of seeing, basically.
Exactly.
You know, the lead character played by Carl Boehm is. He's a cameraman. He's a photographer. He has his little, I don't know what you call him, but one of those little cameras. I don't know what the specific name is.
Right.
You know, but he kind of aspires to be a filmmaker, and he works on film sets in some capacity. And it's just like you see various lenses, like mirrors. You know, just looking through a camera lens, that's another way of seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of filtering reality in a sense. And I really like that. I think it's extremely clever. You see old film footage projected on a wall of the lead character as a child, and his father was performing all these sadistic experiments on him, like to capture his fear response. And I think that's what makes this film more disturbing than Psycho, is that it really gets in that sort of diseased and disturbed headspace of sort of a psycho who's just kind of walking among us undetected in a way, but he has his reasons for the way he is. There's this whole nature versus nurture thing, but
right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say Psycho would have worked if they didn't have that 15 minutes of ludicrous exposition at the end. It was just like, Hitchcock, what the frig are you... go ahead, Johnny, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that kind of... You know, I don't disagree with that, because it's kind of like, you know, you didn't really need it. You could have just left it with Norman Bates in the police station with that monologue to himself.
Yep,
perfect ending.
Yep, yeah. Exactly.
Instead, it's like, no, we got to explain to the audiences of 1960 what's happening. So
stupid as shit. Pisses me off.
But, you know, the interesting thing about Peeping Tom is that the blind character is not... She's within sort of the central circle of characters, but she's a supporting character.
Right.
And it's the mother of the daughter that lives in the same boarding house as the cameraman. And the cameraman becomes infatuated with the daughter,
mm-hmm.
but the mother seems very extremely cognizant of Boehm's character and what he's up to. Kind of, she has these suspicions about him, and there is a fantastic sequence that I think takes place in his apartment, along with the mother, where the mother is terrified, and. You know, Boehm's character is kind of like doing all these kind of subtly sadistic things around her without like touching her.
I know, yeah. It was just creepy and unsettling.
Yeah, so it is very, it is a very disturbing movie, and I think it's, I think there's just so much to it. It's a very rich film. You know, Scorsese despite his, you know, despite the current quote unquote, it's not even controversy, it's so stupid, about the whole, oh, Martin Scorsese's above Marvel movies. Well, I don't necessarily disagree with the stuff that he's been construed as saying. But the thing is, he was a real champion for Peeping Tom because for years
Oh, yeah.
it had a terrible critical reputation.
I don't know why.
When it came out, I think people were calling for the end of Michael. I think it did kind of end his career, which is really a shame because it's a looking at it today, it's just a brilliant and an enduring film.
Yeah, well, we were coming out of that in 1960. We were coming off of that whole heavy-duty censorship bullshit that permeated the United States and Great Britain for so-called free societies, which is complete bullshit to me. Because I'm reading the Henry Miller biography now, and about how like you could get his books in France, you can get them in Switzerland, you can get, but like other than that, like GIs would come over. Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn, after World War II, and they would get in tr like if they mailed it to somebody in the United States, and it was like the Postal Service would, this is pornography, and you'd be f like fined, and it would be destroyed, and it's like, wow, we're a free society. So like back then, you still had that Michael Powell was pushing against the whole nightmare scenario back then. He did continue to direct films, and but he did mostly go to TV, and his last film was a documentary. But yeah, it wasn't. I think it killed what could have been a really prolific career, and should have been after the brilliance that was Peeping Tom.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting thing, and I think of that quote from David Cronenberg, who, he said something about how censors mistake fantasy for reality or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing, it's like, and
Like
like
oh, it's like what's happening in Peeping Tom is actually, oh man, he is that sadistic main character or something like that. That's not what it is.
No, exactly. And, it used to be that, people who played roles like that, like they were just, killing their career, Steve Railsback, who played, Charlie Manson in Helter Skelter, like he was friggin' brilliant, and he should have been launched through the roof, but oh, he wasn't, and he became a B movie actor, and it's disgusting. How many straight people didn't want to play a gay, like a, a gay male character? It's like, oh, my career's over, and all that crap. It's just ridiculous, and you wonder, like, oh, I don't know if I could play a blind character. Like, can I, I don't want to insult them, and I don't want people to label me a particular way, and I don't know. It's all a bunch of shit.
Well, and I feel like, and I'm not an actor, obviously, but I just feel like you almost need to just approach these things from a place of kind of empathy and understanding, I think. And that's where you get the most resonant depictions of a person of a person who is blind. It's not these contrived, Oscar bid for Oscar legitimacy bullshit movies.
No, exactly. Playing on, lame sentimentality and being maudlin and all of this crap. No, yeah, I just, it's just like if you're gonna put any, like I said, any character in a film, whatever their flaw is, if they have a flaw, a character flaw, that's fine. But if they have a weakness, just or a strength, whatever it is. I mean, blind. One of the great things is horror presents blindness as a strength, and almost consistently compared to literature, which is, pretty can be inconsistent with it. So I think, once again. Horror has a leg up on other, genres because, horror gives everybody a chance. You know what I mean? It's like,
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's what I love. So I think if you're going to see a lot of strong, blind characters, you probably find them in R.
I think that's really poignant, Bill, because I think you're right. There's horror is such a diverse genre, like bursting with subgenres, and there's so much you can do within it. And I think that's where a lot of, empathetic and really talented people kind of go to, like, say, I've seen this character or this type of character or this type of affliction depicted before, and I don't like it. So what am I going to do to distinguish it within the framework of the genre? And I mean, go back to, Late Phases. That's like a perfect example of, what you could do with a concept and something like that, and not have it be sentimental or maudlin or exploitative.
I think
So that, go ahead. I
I
was going to
think
say that that's the message of tonight's show. That's
All right. Well, then on that note, I'm going to do scream outs, man.
All right, cool.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, these are people that we follow and who follow us on Twitter and who are really cool. I'm going to give you their Twitter handle first, tell you a little bit about them, and move on. We're screaming out to them because they're damn cool, and follow them, check them out, see what they got going on. The first one is Twitter handle Mikey's Dead. And that is Mikey Bones with a Z. He's a part of the Slasher Radio podcast. In fact, he hosts Slasher Radio, which you could also follow on Twitter. It's part of the Shudder Network, and you could even subscribe. And also go to their great website, slasherradio.com. You will not be disappointed. I act, so I am. Who the hell is that? That is Mandolin Carlson, who is amazing. She's an award-winning actress. She's been on Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, CSI New York, and Disney's I Didn't Do It. And where's she? She's out in Hollywood, damn it. And
Nice.
follow her on IMDb as well. Another actress, filmmaker, and a writer and director is Zhang, Zhang underscore Hanyun. Hanyun. She is wonderful and amazing and beautiful as well. Please check her out on Twitter. Zombie Nomicon. There you go. dude, they support indie film. They're part of it. Check out what they're doing. Don't miss them on Twitter. See what they have next in the horror realm. Dot 1541. Who's that? That's Dorothy, damn it. And she loves history, sports, comedy, music, and food. Also, werewolves, vampires, pugs, and creatures of the night. So there you go. Underscore nightmare news. And it's your nightmares are real and have led you here to news, reviews, and scary points of views. And it's the best in the horror world daily. So check them out. Dave underscore phantom. And who is that? That's Phantom Dark Dave. He's the host of Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. He's the featured co-host. The featured co-host is Jen Dreadful. She's awesome. And for fans of horror, trauma, sci-fi, Marvel, and DC Comics, can't go wrong with that. Body Trade Comic. That's awesome, isn't it? It's all about blood, boobs, and prostitutes selling body parts. Fun for the whole family. That's how they're out of Toronto. Check them out. The comic book looks outrageous. Body Trade Comic. Gorilla Producer. Who is that? That's the great Calvin. He is a producer. He's out in LA and he's an award-winning indie film producer. You could check him out on imdb.com, but definitely go check out his Twitter handle first, Gorilla Producer. He's awesome. Miss hanging out with him. Hope to get to LA again in the near future to do just that. You'd love him, Johnny. He's a trip.
I do like his tweets. They're very down to earth, let's say.
Oh yeah. He keeps it real. He's awesome. Tim O'Donnell 14. Who is he? He's the Celtic Critic, and he says, "I am not a number. I am a free man." And, exactly. And where is he? He's out of Bronx, New York, baby. So, Tim O'Donnell, check him out. You can't go wrong. Johnny, those are our scream outs for tonight.
Awesome, Bill. And it just occurred to me that our podcast is a non-visual medium. So thank you everyone for using your brain and your ears to listen to this show.
Awesome. And oddly enough, I have a wonderful, beautiful friend. Oh, by the way, Krista Planko says hi, Johnny.
Hello.
She's one of our fans. She's awesome. And she's my boss. But anyway, yeah, she's very cool. Love her. And I have a friend, Betsy, who's beautiful and amazing. And she said, Bill, I wish you could transcribe your podcast because she's deaf.
Wow.
And I looked into that and I was like, Betsy, I love you, but it would cost me a fortune. And this show makes no money. So I'm sorry.
I'll do it in my spare time, Bill.
I'm trying to find, oh yeah, sure you will. I'm trying to find an alternate route because I'd love to make that happen for people. But go ahead, Johnny, I'm sorry.
I mean, I didn't have anything except except you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And yeah, Bill, where can people find you?
You could find me on Twitter at Crash Palace and also at CrashPalaceProduction.com for links to this show, as well as wonderful articles from wonderful writers, not just me. And that's it.
All right, Bill.
That was interesting, man.
That was,
That
yeah.
was. And so, Johnny, I bid you adieu, my friend.
Au revoir, my friend.
Oh my gosh. Bonasera. All right, let's stop. We'll keep going. Bye.
Sounds good. Bye.